This is Radio Boston. I'm Lisa Mullins.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We'll start today with politics and the fight for control of the U.S. Senate. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren is on the road again, campaigning for Democrats again in the South.
Yesterday, she brought her fiery populist message to West Virginia to help raise money for Democratic Senate candidate Natalie Tennant.
I'm here because I believe in democracy. I believe in Natalie Tennant. She's going to be your next senator. Make it happen.
As we reported on this program last month, Senator Warren was in Kentucky campaigning for the Democrats in a Republican stronghold. Just this year, she's also gone to Oregon, Ohio, Washington, and Minnesota. And later on this week, she'll head to Michigan.
It appears that Warren has become the go-to Democratic superstar this election season. Her political team estimates that she has helped raise more than $2.5 million for fellow Democrats since she took office. WBUR's Asma Khalid has been following Senator Warren through West Virginia this week, and she joins us now from NPR in Washington. And Asma, good to have you on the program.
Nice to be here.
So this is an open Senate seat, which will be vacated by the retiring Jay Rockefeller. You were on the road with Senator Warren yesterday as she campaigned for Natalie Tennant. Give us a sense of what Warren is saying. What message is she delivering?
Well, she really tries to tug, I think, at people's heartstrings. She, you know, grew up in Oklahoma, and we heard a lot of that Oklahoma drawl in her speech. She also spoke about the economics and about her childhood, her mother's struggle with income.
I remember the day when my mother, who was then 50 years old, had always been a stay-at-home mom, pulled her best dress out of the closet, zipped it up, put on her high heels, put on her lipstick, squared her shoulders, dried her eyes, and walked over to the Sears to get a minimum wage job so that we could hang on to our home.
Asma, you mentioned that Oklahoma drawl. You can really hear it there. How are Democrats in West Virginia responding to her message?
I think it resonated amazingly. I mean, I spoke with countless people who told me that they were there to see Elizabeth Warren. They love her. They wish she was running for president and that she was really the superstar who brought out the crowds. Natalie Tennant, as we mentioned, you know, she is this woman who is running for Senate in West Virginia, but people feel a little lukewarm about her. And I spoke with one woman, Cheryl Gallery. She owns a wine shop in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, which is where this rally was held. And she told me she admires Elizabeth Warren and even donated to her campaign to become a senator in Massachusetts. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
The cost of student loans, I mean, that directly affects my son. She's in Massachusetts, but she's affecting the whole country with her important stance on things. How clearly she sees the banking industry and everything. And, you know, it's just, yeah, she's amazing.
As we reported on this show, Warren was campaigning in Kentucky last month. Why is she campaigning so hard in the South? Because, you know, blue state senator working so hard in predominantly red South.
I think that she's traveling to places like Kentucky and like West Virginia because she's really focusing on this message of economic populism. If you heard what she had to say in West Virginia, it was all about the middle class, student loan reform, and the need to boost the minimum wage. Those are the messages that she's focusing on, and that is a message that translates incredibly well in a place like West Virginia. It's a state that is overwhelmingly white, but it's also overwhelmingly poor. And Elizabeth Warren has been tapping into that message, hoping to sort of energize the base. I spoke with this woman, Jennifer Duffy. She's the senior editor for the Cook Political Report in Washington, and she's analyzing a number of senatorial races across the country. She says that Elizabeth Warren is unique because she appeals to drop-off voters. These are people who vote in presidential elections but don't necessarily turn out in midterm elections.
Her message really appeals to some of these voters, which is why I think that they want her in places like Kentucky and West Virginia because she might fire up a base that is otherwise somewhat disinterested in this election.
So she fires up the base, Asma, but she also fires up her political opponents. We hear frequently when she's campaigning down in the South response from the pro-Republican super PAC American Crossroads. That's funded by Karl Rove. It's put out a video attacking Warren, calling her a war on coal enthusiast and the queen of class warfare, among other things. I'm wondering if Warren responds to that line of attack or does she ignore it?
I think that it's certainly the elephant in the room. Elizabeth Warren's stance on coal is widely divergent from Natalie Tennant and, frankly, from many other folks in West Virginia. But I think what was unique is that Elizabeth Warren, in campaigning for Natalie Tennant yesterday in West Virginia, she acknowledged that. She said, no, they don't agree on everything.
But on the core issue, on the issue that is about our values, on the issue that define us as human beings, Natalie and I agree. Our job is to fight for the families of America. That is our job.
So as you hear, Anthony, she sort of addressed it indirectly. Mm-hmm. She didn't necessarily talk about coal there, but she acknowledged that her and Natalie do differ on issues, but then tried to circle back and make this about economics. And that really, you know, the Democrats cannot lose the Senate, lose control of the Senate this November, because that would just so starkly change the conversation on economics. Mm.
You know, Asma, it's really striking how prominent Elizabeth Warren's national profile is during her first term in the Senate. And I'm thinking of Hillary Clinton. When she first went to the Senate, she stayed pretty low-key and sort of stayed home and sort of stayed under the radar for a while. Is there a sense that Warren is laying the groundwork for her own future here, perhaps a run at the White House?
You know, that is the question that everyone keeps asking. And Elizabeth Warren has repeatedly denounced that. She insists she is not running for president, at least not in 2016. But Jennifer Duffy from the Cook Political Report, who I spoke with, she mentioned that if Hillary Clinton does not run in 2016, she thinks there will be enormous pressure on Elizabeth Warren to jump into the race. And that's something I heard from countless people in the audience yesterday. They say that, you know, Elizabeth Warren, in her limited tenure as a senator, has really become this beacon for a number of issues that don't just affect people in Massachusetts. They really do affect a number of people across the country. You know, student loan reform in particular came up from a number of people that I spoke with.
And Asma, while Elizabeth Warren is campaigning in West Virginia, Paul Ryan is down there as well with the Republican Senate candidate, Representative Shelley Moore Capito. So are Warren and Ryan seen as the leaders of their parties in this midterm election? It seems that way, at least on the campaign trail.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be certainly a fair assessment. You know, Elizabeth Warren and Paul Ryan, what I think is interesting is that they're both focusing on the economy. You know, we've been hearing repeatedly that we are in a far better state than we were during the midst of the Great Recession. But these are both people who are focusing on the economy in different ways. And it's interesting that their messages seem to be resonating during this midterm election. I know that Elizabeth Warren, you know, is on the road again later this week. She'll be in Michigan campaigning for the Democratic Senate, hopefully. There in Detroit.
All right. That's WBUR's Asma Khalid reporting on the movements and campaigning of Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. She was joining us from NPR in Washington. Asma, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's time now for the Remembrance Project, The Lives of Those Among Us. This is our series of stories from writer Alyssa Eli about ordinary people who live extraordinary lives.
Jamie Bliss died December 6th in Boston. He was 49 years old and had spent 4 months on a palliative care unit, where family and volunteers read him the local sports pages. His mother also read him Dr. Seuss, as she had done during his childhood. Green eggs and ham was his favorite. He was born after a difficult pregnancy and didn't talk until he was six. It took many years to diagnose the details of his brain damage, and without a diagnosis, the state would not fund school or housing placements. But that is not his life story. His life story is how much his family loved him. His mother administered speech therapy, occupational therapy, and physical therapy. His father took him along on work rounds, and they kept a tranquil fish tank in the house that he watched for hours. Even so, even with all these protective efforts, neighborhood bullies circled, and life, though full of love, was difficult. When he finally moved to a residential school across the state, he thrived. He medaled in Special Olympics, learned to garden, and ate what he grew. His parents had three older siblings to raise, but they visited every weekend. Every weekend. Jamie was both generous and particular. On trash day, he went up and down the street rearranging rubbish. When a neighbor's home was damaged in a storm, he brought his lunch and a saw over and cut their ruined porch into precise 4-inch pieces. He couldn't read or write, but had a genius for animals whose lives had also been difficult. His father said he could pat a grizzly bear. Once he calmed a biting stallion, he went into the stable alone, and when they emerged together, the horse's head was on Jamie's shoulder. Seizures began in his 20s and gradually grew uncontrollable until he could no longer go out for fried clams or ride on the back of motorcycles. "I hate being like this," he said. He was hospitalized, then in rehab, then rehospitalized. By his late 40s, medications had stopped working. He had already given the future some thought, though, and told his parents he wanted to donate his organs after death. The reason, he said, was to make someone else's heart happy.
Alyssa Eli remembering Jamie Bliss, who died last December in Boston at the age of 49.
And the Remembrance Project airs every Tuesday on Radio Boston. If you'd like to suggest someone to be profiled for the series, you can send an email to obits@wbur.org. You can also find more information at radioboston.org.
Stay with us. Coming up, parents may say that they prioritize happiness and compassion over achievement, but according to a new study, that's not what their kids are hearing. I'm Lisa Mullins.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.